Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, comedian Matt Knutson talks about getting pulled over by the cops one night after a comedy show.
So, of course, I'm driving. I'm trying to slow down in a timely manner, but I see the cop sitting right there where they changed the speed limit with his gun out. Boop! And it's never a good sign when you see a police officer set his coffee down. It just means I have some action I need to take. It's going down.
Okay, this can't be good.
He had his hands near his hips, right? Not on his hips, it's near his hips. There's an important difference. On your hips means I'm very disappointed in you. Near your hips means in 2 seconds, I could pepper spray your face and then shoot it.
Today on Storyworthy, comedian Matt Knutson tells the story about getting pulled over and trying to make a cop laugh. Stick around for A Brush with the Law.
Hey, it's Matt Knutson, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. I think I need to get like a sound effect there. Like maybe like a whoosh or like a tingle, 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 something. Maybe fireworks. Anyway, listen, you guys, I hope you enjoyed the story last week with comedian Kristen Carney and her story, I Was a Cross-Eyed Kid, which I have to tell you, it was sort of intense. I mean, I thought it was just going to be about like her being bullied, having crossed eyes as a kid, or you know, being teased. But actually, it's more about like a childhood trauma story about her getting this eye surgery when she was only 3 years old, and how that became like this unresolved trauma that has stayed with her entire life. So it's pretty darn good. So you guys go back and listen to Kristen's story, but not today. Because today, you guys have tuned in for a really fun episode, because today's guest, comedian Matt Knutson, here's what it is, you guys. He brings it. Do you know what I mean? It's true. Matt, you are one of those guys that is always funny, and you're uplifting. You're never going to hear a negative word out of your mouth or about you. If I swear to God, Matt, if it turns out you sexually harassed somebody in the past and there's a picture, I will hate you so bad.
I've never been powerful enough to be groped by someone that matters.
Yeah. Oh, man. I would be so angry if I find out you ever sexually harassed. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, you guys, Matt's here today, and he brings forth the topic, brush with the law.
Brush with the law. Thank you for those nice words, Christy, and I really appreciate it.
And I have to say, it just seems very unlike you, Matt, to even have a brush with the law, because right. You are such a clean-cut American, you know, you're like, sure. You're American. And what was the name of your comedy album was American.
That's true, last album, American. And you know what? I say this all the time, but if it's a choice between perception and reality, just go with perception every time.
Yeah. And you know, you would make one of those amazing serial killers on TV, like a Lifetime movie, because you would never suspect you.
Yeah. And actually, we were having this conversation before we went on the air. Your friend Peter Sprite.
Right.
He and I did an episode of Rosewood together, the Morris Chestnut vehicle at Fox. And I was the guy that killed the girl at the end.
Really?
And they didn't suspect me because, you know, I was wearing a suit.
Really?
That is so awesome. Murderers don't wear suits.
I've got to find that clip. Is that on YouTube, do you think?
I'm not sure. I it's probably on Fox somewhere.
Oh, I would love to see
that. The episode is called Silkworms y Silencio.
Oh, well, at least it's a catchy title.
Sure.
Just, what in the world?
Yeah, the S's really roll off your...
Okay, brush with the law.
We're
going to hear your story in a second. I'm going to tell you my quick little brush with the law that just happened recently.
Great.
I mean, I've had so many.
Sure, right. I mean,
true.
I've lived. I've had a life.
You see my tats?
Right.
No, I don't. I have very few brushes with the law stories, but I do have one recently. I got a ticket in the car, essentially a cell phone ticket. But I have to tell you, I mean, I'm not defending it, but I will say that it wasn't the cell phone law in California just passed January of 2017.
Uh-huh.
So this is like the very beginning of February, February 5th. So
right.
It was only enacted for 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I didn't know this, but I will say this. I'm going down Melrose Avenue. My daughter's in the back seat. I'm going to an audition, 7461 Beverly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down Beverly. I see the building on the right-hand side.
Mm-hmm.
And all I do is pick up the cell phone, which is on the front seat, and I say, cancel navigation.
Right.
And I drop the phone.
Right.
So the phone never goes to my mouth. Mm-hmm. The phone does not go to my ear.
Mm-hmm.
I say, cancel navigation. Woo, woo, woo. And a motorcycle cop pulls me over.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to say, I was pissed because
sure.
My daughter's scared. She's upset. And I'm like, you know, I wasn't on the phone. You could check the record.
Right.
I wasn't on the phone. He said, but you were touching the phone. You had it in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bottom line is I decided to go to court.
Right.
Because, you know, it's one of those things where you have to try. I felt like I have to try. Because
agreed.
I
and you never know when the cop is not going to show up.
Right. Because
I think they have to, like, represent. And, you know, if they don't, it's dismissed immediately.
Right. So I had always heard that as, you know, being truthful that, you know, if the cop didn't show up, then it's dismissed. So
sure.
I thought, well, I'm going to carry this through. But the thing is the first thing you have to do is show up for, like, an arraignment. Is
mm-hmm.
it called an arraignment?
Well, according to Law and Order, yes, it is.
I think it is the
yeah.
first part. It tells you you can even
you tell
go
me
to
Dick
court.
Wolf.
there's a process. So you have to go
right,
downtown.
Right.
You have to park your
how
car.
How do you plead? Yeah,
how
that's
do
where
you
plead guilty, not guilty.
Right. But the thing is right off the bat, you've got to drive downtown.
Right.
Find a parking space.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for your turn to plead your
right.
how you plead.
Mm-hmm.
Then get back in your car, drive back home. So honestly, just for that arraignment was a 3-hour process.
Sure.
Right. So then I get home and then the case isn't for like 3 or 4 more months.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to think about it all this time.
Right.
But I'm trying to like, instead of just admitting he's right, you
right.
know, instead of saying he's right, I had that phone in my hand, even if it was for a brief second.
Right.
I feel like this is, I don't know why I want to make a stand. I have nothing to stand on. I have no legs to stand on, but I'm angry.
Let me ask you this.
What?
How many times did you rehearse your courtroom speech?
Oh, my
in
gosh.
Bed with the lights off.
Oh,
Your
my gosh.
Honor.
I still rehearse that
yeah.
speech. I hold it back for a monologue now. It was so damn good.
Yeah.
But
in your face, Sam Waterston. Yeah.
But anyway, so then I wait, and then finally the court thing comes up. And now it's in May,
mm-hmm.
and this happened in February.
May.
And I'm in court. And you are exactly right. There must have been no less.
Right.
I'm not kidding. No less than 200 people in the courtroom. The first thing
all rehearsing their speech,
yeah.
Your Honor. Okay,
the first
all
thing
right.
they did is the bailiff
mm-hmm.
reads aloud all the names of the people that are dismissed because the officer in their case did not show up. I kid you not, he read off about 120 names.
Mm-hmm.
All those people, one by one, get up and walk out. Get up and walk out. All those people. So for
right.
them, it was worth it.
Right.
My cop did not, you know, back down. And he
you got
was
cop
there.
Of the year on so, your case.
Right. So then my
I never
name,
miss a court date.
Right. So then my name is called.
Right.
And it's the cop who's called my name. Or it's the bailiff who's called my name. And he says, meet with your cop in the back. So
right.
me and my cop have to go out into the freaking hallway of the Superior Court of California.
Right.
You know that building. And he says to me, so how are you going to plead? And I go, well, obviously not guilty because
I'm here.
I've already invested 9 hours
right.
into this.
Yeah, I'm here.
Know? And he says, okay, well, I just want you to know I got a tape. And so I'm like, okay. So we go back into the courtroom.
Did he let you watch it?
Well, it was not. It wasn't a videotape. It was an audio tape.
Oh, I see.
And so we go back into the courtroom. And then finally, it's my turn is called. You know, as I said, my parking has probably expired. I mean, it's just like,
sure.
this is just a nightmare.
That's
but I'm
another
there.
$87
yeah,
for the
I got
ticket.
A babysitter.
You have to go back and fight. Right?
So they finally call me up, and I'm at the stand, the podium, and then
mm-hmm.
the cop is at the podium, and the judge says, tell me what happened. And I said, I'm telling you, and here, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth, Matt, just
okay.
you, because
right.
nobody else is going to hear it.
Sure.
I
just
say,
me, you, and the cat.
I say, the phone was in the visor. I push the button, and I say, cancel navigation.
Mm-hmm.
The phone wasn't really in the, you know, visor.
Right.
It was in my hand.
Right.
But I just said, it was in the visor. I said, cancel navigation. That was it. I was not on the telephone. I was not texting. My daughter was in the back seat. I would never do that in the car. I'm very safe. I'm an actress, audition, etc.
Right.
Cop gets up. And here's how his take goes. He's like,
right.
Tuesday afternoon at 3:42 in the afternoon.
Oh, wow.
I was present in the city of Los Angeles County in the state of California. Go Cal Bears. I mean, he had like
the spiel.
A spiel.
Yeah, all right.
And he was done. And then the judge said to me, do you have any questions to ask? And now thinking back, my question would have been, why didn't he play that tape? Or what was on the tape? Or why was there a tape?
Maybe he's bluffing.
Right.
Right.
And I say, no, I have no questions because I don't have any questions. And he just hammers down that gavel and he goes, judge rules in favor of the plaintiff. Was it plaintiff? Or whatever
did
he
you
said.
Win or lose?
I lost. But,
yeah.
He goes, no, judge rule, you lose. I forget what he said. He said to the cop, that would have been great.
That's what the judge says. He just bangs the gavel, you lose. What does that even
and then
mean?
All these balloons fell from the ceiling and this confetti, right. A dancing bear came out. Now then I have to take I have to take the citation in my hand.
What?
I have to take it down to the counter to check out.
Yeah.
There's 9 windows.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's, I don't know, 72 people in line. Now it's
all
getting
being
dark
told
out.
That they lost.
For a fact, I know for a fact that my parking has expired. There
sure.
is no doubt about
oh, yeah.
it.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of this whole thing, I lost.
Right.
My point is, you have a brush with the law. I think a lot of times it's better to just acquiesce, grit your teeth, swallow it.
Agreed.
Move on.
I used to go to, like, just for fun, a small claims court. And you can just sit in the back and, like, listen to these people argue their own cases. Because they don't have attorneys. It's just they stand at, like, the podium. And they're able to ask the other person questions. But it's done via the judge who's sitting on the bench. But the person is standing right next to them. So they can hear what they're asking.
Right.
And then, like, once the judge hears the question, then he, like, looks to the other guy and he gets the response.
Yeah.
So
it's
I just
a live Judge Judy.
It's amazing. And you just go to the courthouse, you metal detector, and you can go and sit in any courtroom that you
Ladies
want.
Ladies and gentlemen, take that little nugget with you to go to your local courthouse and just hang out,
it's
you
amazing.
Know, in
yeah.
a trench coat by yourself with a baseball hat pulled over your eyes. You know, do it. Matt Knutson does.
That's right.
And we know he's all American. All right, you guys, before we get to Matt's story, I did want to remind you to head over to my website, storyworthypodcast.com. And check out what's going on over there, because I change it all the time. There's like this mailing list. There's buttons, music. It's very exciting. And don't forget to subscribe to Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast, because you guys, you know, and I know, and everybody knows that I need that stuff. I need ratings, I need reviews, and I need subscribers. All right, you guys. Matt Knutson is a comedian, like I said, and he's appeared on Conan, The Late Late Show, Last Call, and Comics Unleashed, as well as in dozens of comedy festivals, including Montreal Just for Laughs, the San Francisco Sketch Fest, Bridgetown, and he's even entertained at the White House for President and Mrs. Obama. Now, Matt has 3 critically acclaimed albums, The Comedy Stylings of Matt Knutson, American, that's the one we were talking about, and the last one is called Yes And. Yes, and you can find them on iTunes, SiriusXM, and Pandora Radio. You can find Matt over at his website, mattknutson.com, and also on Twitter, @MattKnutson. Okay, this is exciting. You guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Matt Knutson.
Hey, I guess I'll put my own hands together. Thank you. What an introduction, Christine. I appreciate it. And yes, as we were talking about at the beginning, there was a brush with the law that I was a part of. I don't know if you or anyone has ever gone up to Lake Tahoe Mammoth using the old Highway 395. For those of you that don't know, there's basically 2 ways to get up to that part of the country. You can take the 5, which is, you know, a very modern 5-lane superhighway, or the back route, the eastern route, is the 395. So you go north and south. And the difference between the two is once you get on the 5, you're just going like 80 miles an hour the entire time. When you go on the 395, it's like an old school highway, which actually goes through the little towns on the way. So you have to slow down and basically go from 75 to 35 in about 25 feet. So, of course, I'm driving. I'm trying to slow down in a timely manner, but I see the cop sitting right there where they changed the speed limit with his gun out. Boop! And It's never a good sign when you see a police officer set his coffee down. It just means I have some action I need to take. It's going down. So he lights me up. And I guess how it works out there is the towns are so small, they don't have like a sheriff for each town. I think this guy was like the sheriff for like 12 towns. Right. So he got out of his car, and for some reason he wasn't dressed like a Barney Fife, like deputy sheriff. He was dressed like a warlord, you know, like a vest and like the camo pants with the pockets and the glasses. He looked like he shopped at the Idris Elba Beasts of No Nation section at Target. So he gets out of the car, and he did one of the biggest cop moves I've ever seen, because he didn't go to the driver's side. He actually went to the passenger side of my car, and I rolled down the window, and he was standing far enough away from me that he didn't have to break his posture. He never leaned into the car. He just stood next to the car, fully standing up, and he had his hands near his hips, right? Not on his hips, it's near his hips. There's an important difference. On your hips means I'm very disappointed in you. Near your hips means in 2 seconds, I could pepper spray your face and then shoot it. So I was actually driving on the 395, and the only reason I was on there was because I was coming home from Lake Tahoe. I was performing at the Improv at the Harvey's in South Lake Tahoe, an amazing week. And this was like a 1 hour window after like this great week that I had up there. So I said, I'm sorry. You get that like that clench, and you can almost like hear your heartbeat in your ears. I didn't. I basically told him, I said, I'm a comedian. And I didn't tell him that I was a comedian. If this tells you anything about the life of a stand-up comedian, I didn't tell him I was a comic to impress him. I did it hoping he would feel sorry for me. So, I'm a comedian. And he's like, comedian, huh? He's like, why don't you tell me a funny cock joke? What? Okay. First of all, no one calls them cock jokes. I think as anyone who's even heard anything knows that they're called dick jokes. And they're told in locker rooms and mechanics' office. You know, the guy that fixes your car knows all the dick jokes. So I don't know a lot of those jokes because, one, I don't find them tremendously funny. And two, if anyone can tell them, I don't remember them very often. But fortunately, the night before I left, I was playing blackjack at a table with a guy who was rattling off dick jokes all night long. And I was like, oh, this is serendipitous that I have this ready to go. It's already in the holster. And I didn't remember exactly how it went. So I'll tell you the way that the joke is supposed to go so that you can hear how the joke did not go when I told it to this law enforcement officer. Basically, the joke goes something like this. There's a mother and her young daughter standing in a field looking at a horse. And the girl points to the horse and says, Mommy, what's that thing that's hanging down underneath the horse? And her mother says, oh, it's nothing, dear, it's nothing, and takes her hand and they leave the field. Later that day, the girl's talking to her dad and says, I pointed at the thing that was hanging down under the horse and I asked Mommy what that was, and she said it was nothing. To which the dad responds, yeah, I spoil her. Right? Classic dick joke. So I'm trying to like remember how it's supposed to go. And of course, I want to get to this police officer's favorite word as soon as possible. So I was like, oh, yeah, there's this horse in the field. The horse had a big cock. And the cock was hanging under the horse's cock. To which he says, I said cop joke. C-O-P. License and registration. So he takes my stuff back to his car. Meanwhile, I'm in my car trying to Google cop jokes, hoping to save the day, but I have no service. I'm in the mountains. So after about 10 minutes of just he comes back. He hands me my stuff. He says, well, I called the club. Apparently you are a comedian. And he's like, I'm going to let you off at a warning, but slow it down through the towns. Thank you, officer. Thank you. And he turns on his heel to go. He leans back. He's like, hey, did you hear the one about the guy that broke in the police station? Stole all the toilet seats? I said, no, I didn't hear that one, officer. He's like, well, there's an investigation underway, but right now, we've got nothing to go on. And he turned and walked out of my life, and that cop won. You know?
That cop was funny. That cop was really, really funny.
Yeah. True story.
Do you know any cop jokes now?
I just know that one that just I told, that, one. That he told.
Because you might want to get a couple for your quiver.
I know.
On the road. When he came back and said, I talked to the club, and they said you were a comedian.
Apparently you are a comedian. He
says, because that joke you just said wasn't funny at all.
No.
No. Matt, that it is was... so humorous.
Thank you. Thank you.
I cannot believe it. When you pulled out then, did you just drive super carefully home or what was
Yeah. I mean, you know.
You really, it is funny after you get pulled over, you really do quickly adjust your driving habits.
It's true.
I haven't touched my phone in like 9 months.
It did its job.
How right. fast do you think you were going, truly? I mean, you were slowing down.
Well, you go like 65, because it's like one of those old two-lane highways.
Yeah,
so
but you got to slow down to what then?
I think 35, 45, something like that. But when you pull in, if I was going 55 or 60, I don't even know. I don't have a guess.
Yeah. So what's your favorite part about traveling on the road like that?
You know what? When you do comedy or you end up in another city, mm-hmm. you can explore that city and you can actually become a part of the community mm-hmm. immediately just by going out and just by going to things. You know?
When I was a flight attendant, I couldn't count on there being a gym in the hotel. Mm-hmm. Usually there was, but sometimes it was one of those gyms that's like just a tiny little room, like a closet.
There's a guy named Jim. Here's your gym. Yeah, well, that's gym just a man.
And they have like a treadmill, like, you know, broken down right. facing the Today Show. So I would always just pack my tennis shoes. And I know you're a runner. I'm not a runner anymore, but I used to be. And that was a great thing to do on the road.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, I would, as soon as we would land and get to the hotel, I would try to get out and run, even just for half an hour.
Right.
Because if you run, as you know, from your hotel and even just run in one direction for 15 minutes,
right.
turn around and run in the other direction 15 minutes, you have covered, well, me, I've covered 8 miles. No, you have covered like 2 miles so that later, right. after you take a shower, you know where to go back out, as
right.
it were.
Yeah, I recon. You do a little recon.
Yeah, but you are a runner as well, obviously.
That's true.
And how many marathons have you done now?
You know, I've done LA 5 years in a row, and I'm signed up to do it next year.
That is so impressive. You know, I've done one, and right. it was in 1999,
still
a long time
very
ago.
Impressive.
I know, but to keep doing it, and also, you're a pretty big guy. I mean, you're probably 6'1"?
I'm 6'2", two bills.
What's two bills mean?
200.
200 pounds, yeah. right. So that's a good amount of weight.
Yeah. I've said this many times. I'm a Clydesdale. I'm not a Mustang. I'm just, I just jog the whole thing. I take pictures. I stop and do the drinks. People can track my bib,
yeah,
like through the course. So I have friends come out and I visit with them.
That's
and
so
you
kind.
Know,
stop at House of Pies.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Catch a movie.
Yeah, and the LA route is it starts in the parking lot at Dodger Stadium, and you run through all the iconic neighborhoods of LA until you get to the Santa Monica Pier.
That
it's
marathon
amazing.
Has changed so many times. Yeah. I mean, I was in it in 99. It was one of the last years. It was that difficult. Listen to me. Of course, mm-hmm. I'm immediately being competitive.
Right.
No, but it was a difficult year because like mile 24 and 25 were on an upgrade, and it was very, very difficult.
Brutal.
Yeah, and then they changed it because they wanted to get better Olympic times, mm-hmm. I guess, for the trials and the mm-hmm. Olympics. And also the idea of just running through the city to the ocean makes so much sense.
It's beautiful. And there's a certain point where the last part of it is somewhat downhill. Like it goes San Vicente through Santa Monica to Ocean. And that whole area.
Ocean
like,
Park, you mean?
Oh, no, no, no. Ocean Avenue.
Okay.
It's like Palisades Park area.
Oh, wow. That's pretty.
But yeah, there's guys who like run marathons competitively for like their career, like the Kenyans. And
yeah,
you,
sure.
You see that. But you see them stopped at all points in the marathon, like usually between 5 and 10 miles. They know if it's not their day, they don't keep trying because they
is
have
that
one.
True?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I didn't realize
surprised.
That.
They're just like, you know what? No.
Well, they don't quit running. They just slow down.
They stop. They quit running.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Back up. You're telling me that professional athletes that mm-hmm. travel around the world
right.
will land in a city and they start running the marathon.
Yes.
And within 5 miles to 10 miles yes. out of 26, they yes. make a choice whether to finish that marathon.
That's correct.
No, I never heard that in my whole life.
Yeah, that's true. I was very surprised. You're running past like these guys, you know, and they're stopped and they're eating oranges and that's it.
They're not going to run anymore.
No.
Is that true?
Yeah.
And do they have a coach that tells them to stop running or they just feel
I'm not
it in
sure.
their body?
I think they feel it in their body. And then they also know, too, these are guys who are sponsored for, you know,
major things.
For yeah. major things. So unless they're going to be in the mix, I think they just call their own number and like, eh.
Really?
I'm going to save it for next weekend. I'll be in Montreal next weekend, and then I'm going to be in Paris, and then I'm going to be in, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, so why try to keep hammering out 4.5 minute miles for the next
yeah.
11, 12, 15 miles?
Yeah, and I think the winner gets like $25,000.
Yeah.
So some of these other know, if it could financially gain you to be in better shape for the next one, it's,
no,
you know.
I just find that fascinating. I just thought that if you start a race, you finish a race.
Right. Well, they're not.
I guess it's just
maybe,
not thinking
according
that
to
way.
This placement I had as a child, when you start a race, you
do
finish
Do you see
a
the
race.
Poster of the kitty hanging on the branch? You got to hang in there,
baby.
Hang in there,
baby.
I can't get over that. Marathoners yep. just quit. I'm going to talk yeah. to my brother about that because my brother's a big runner, mm-hmm. and he's done several marathons. My brother used to try to get into the heavyweight class or whatever, you know, the people that were over 200 pounds mm-hmm. in the Pittsburgh Marathon.
Oh, I didn't know there
were
was
in
a
different,
that was
a
thing.
Like, it was a different weight class, uh-huh. you know, it was like not heavy set people.
Right.
It was like the, I don't know, but my brother, when we would go get weighed in, because right. my brother was always teetering on like 197, 198.
Right.
He was 6 foot tall. He could never quite get over 200. So he would drink like 2 gallons of water out on the sidewalk. Yeah. And then he would stuff his jean pockets full of coins.
Right.
He'd have coins in his shoes. He'd have coins in his pockets.
So that he could weigh more over 200 pounds.
So he'd be 201, 202. Wow. And then he'd be in a better division. And then he'd rank somewhere.
Right.
And that's, of course, all we really want, isn't
hilarious.
It?
Hilarious. It's true. I just want to rank somewhere. Yeah. I don't know if we had this conversation. This last marathon that I did was part of something called the Conquer LA Challenge.
Wow.
Which they just tried to do for the first time this last year, which was so I signed up for it. It's 3 races in one season. It's the Santa Monica 10K,
right.
the Pasadena Half Marathon, and you know, the LA Marathon.
That's super
and if you do
fun.
All three of them, like they gave me this finisher's medal for
that's
doing those
super
three.
Fun.
So, you know,
I love that.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that rock and roll one, rock and roll marathon in San Diego?
No.
Where they would have bands along the route.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's super fun as mm-hmm. well. It's a great culture. So when you just go out for a run, or if you're training for the marathon, how much distance do you do, or how much time? Not so
I
much
never,
distance, but
yeah,
time.
I never really do more than 5 miles.
Yeah. When I ran, the only one I ran as well, the most I ran was 2 hours. I would
uh-huh.
I would try to go out an hour and back an hour.
Yeah.
But that was a good amount of running.
Yeah.
But even now, if I did 2 miles, that would be a good
2 miles
amount.
Is a lot of miles. Yeah. And also, too, I've said this before. On the day, it's gonna suck.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're never gonna run that far, at least personally,
right,
outside of the confines of that event.
Yeah.
So I don't need to run close to that to, you know.
Right.
I'd
you
rather
never have
just
to
preserve.
Run. You never have to run 26 miles.
No.
You can probably just get away with learning to run 12 or 15,
mm-hmm,
and you're gonna push it that day.
Yeah. The first time I ever did it, I had never run a marathon before, and running was never a part of my life.
Yeah.
I was 39. I was like, I want to run a marathon before 40.
Well, it is an old man sport.
It is.
Yeah, I'm just saying, it is. It is.
And I'm still 39, everyone.
But most people that run marathons are in their 40s and 50s.
Is that true?
Don't you think? Yeah, because who has the kind of time? Well,
that's true.
I don't know. I don't know. Go ahead. Right. So what were you going to say?
I didn't train at all for the first one.
Yeah.
I just, one day, I bought a pair of shoes, and I ran 15 miles to see how I would feel. And I was like, could I do like another 11 after this? I think I might be able to do. And so I signed up.
But you didn't run zero and then do 15 miles in one thing.
Yeah, that's what I did.
What was going on in your head? What were you? What was that all about?
I don't know. I had never done the a marathon before, and it just, you know.
And you were running on pavement.
Yeah,
because they always say it's better to train on the surface you're going to actually do the marathon on.
Ah,
so you don't want to run on a treadmill and then you go out and do a marathon. It's two different things.
Right.
I don't know.
I do know that the streets of LA, and if you're running the LA marathon and are listening to this, they're graded in such a way that they're always at a slant towards the curb, so that when it rains, the water washes off, and you know, all that stuff. So the only real part that's flat, I run directly on the yellow line
in the middle,
right in the middle. Yeah.
Wow.
Or in that island, in that section.
And that's just one of the little tricks you play with your head, because that can't possibly make a difference. Am I right?
It does make a difference.
You're a liar.
Yeah.
Well,
listen. You're a proven liar. Yeah, sure, I lie all the time,
okay,
but
look,
believe
Matt,
me on this one.
You and I both know you're a liar.
You're a liar.
Listen.
I guess lying doesn't matter anymore. You're like, yeah.
Listen, let's try real hard not to go to politics. It's very hard not to. You know, you were talking about, you know the dick jokes or cock jokes aren't popular, but now they kind of, you know, that all seems so mild.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't seem like anything anymore for what we have to deal with,
right,
you know, the offensive stuff coming out of the White House.
Yep.
Okay, but let's change that real quick. Let's just talk about one more thing, and that is you do a tremendous amount of charity.
Thank you. I try to,
Well, that impresses me. I mean, I've done a lot of charity. I've done a lot of volunteering, but I just think it's so beautiful that you, you know, try to reach out. I know you do work with the Red Cross. And who else do you reach out to?
I've worked with St. Jude every
year. I love St.
Jude. Yeah, every year. I've been running the marathon for them for like three times. And then I host their 5K walk at Paramount Studios.
Oh, that must be a
every
blast.
Year.
What month
great.
Is that? I'd love to do
it
that.
It was just last September.
It's in the fall.
It's in the fall.
Oh, my daughter.
But
love that.
It will be there. It's an annual thing. Next year will be my fifth year hosting
it. That's great. It must be fun.
Yeah, it's great. And then also too, a lot of times charity is abstract. Like maybe you like mail a check or something
sure.
like that. But all these people who are volunteering and walking and raising money, they get to be in the community that feels the same way that they do about something.
That's beautiful,
and
man.
So you're seeing these people with, you know, like Team Jonathan or,
right.
you know.
Sure.
And it's powerful.
It really is powerful.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I've done some volunteering and some charity work at the City of Hope in Duarte.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm a cancer survivor. And
yeah.
it really does give you a feeling of like, oh, man, see, maybe there. After all, I have a little purpose.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
and also,
like somebody can appreciate even the smallest little things. It really does make you feel good.
Yeah. And with the careers that we have, and there's a certain amount of like, me,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
you just... It's implied in the agreement.
Yeah.
But if you can have a component of your life that isn't that, it's...
Well, you don't have children, great. Right?
No, I don't have children.
See, I have a child.
Right.
So she gets a lot of that right. component right
sure.
there.
Sure. And that said, I completely, you know, it's a joke from the act. I don't have children. I have free time and money. That's the way I've decided to live my life.
There is nothing wrong with that, brother.
Yeah.
There's
so,
nothing wrong with that.
You know, I feel a certain gratitude and responsibility and I don't know.
I just think it's beautiful because, I think the more people volunteer, the happier they would be in their lives. It's like if you are feeling down about something, you didn't get a job, things aren't going well, you're depressed, things are sad. If you reach out to someone who is less fortunate, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but it's so true. It's like if you can give somebody a blanket, stop your car by a homeless guy, give him a pillow, just leave a restaurant, give somebody your leftovers. Just reach out the tiniest ways. Leave a quarter on the parking meter. Leave a quarter at the laundromat. Just say thank you to the fireman. I don't know, man. Just little things. I feel like if everybody could just be 10% more fucking generous. That's my motto. Be 10% more fucking generous.
I think that was Buddha, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's me and the Dalai Lama.
That's one of the six practices of Buddhism, generosity.
There you go. Yeah,
when you hear people say, like, I'm practicing Buddhism, they're trying to practice one of six things.
Okay, what are the six things? Do you know the six?
Generosity, ethics, patience, meditation, wisdom, and my favorite, joyous pursuit.
Wow, I like that. Like fruitful labor.
Yeah, you're like, hey, you know what? I'm freaking out. Practice patience.
Practice patience.
Oh, I want to get involved in this and, practicing generosity.
Interesting. I like to turn it around.
When you hear people like complain about their problems, it's just like, go tell your problems to this 10-year-old that has cancer.
Yeah.
Do you think you have like real problems?
I know.
Yeah, it's so come true. On.
It puts your life in perspective very
quickly. Yeah, I've never been a big fan of woe is me.
Yeah.
And also too, show business and it's very hard.
Yeah.
So when you complain about an active choice that you're making, you're just like, come on, buddy.
I know. It's just
saying you need to.
Just that there's highs and there's such extreme highs in show business, and then there's extreme lows. And if you're compelled to do this, you have to do it. So, that being said, if you have certain responsibilities like children, it does make it a little more stressful.
I couldn't agree more.
Like if you're just one guy and nobody needs their lunch packed in the morning, there's one thing. But if you, it just adds a layer of stress. And I still have the choice to be here. I could go back and be a flight attendant again, or I could have a real job, as it were. But then I know I wouldn't be fulfilled. So I want to show my daughter like that I'm pursuing my passion, and that's what I want her to do as well.
Right.
So there's this fine line of being cynical and being angry and being positive.
Right.
It's got to balance a lot of shit.
It's a rich tapestry, and you're killing it, you know? So,
thank you so much.
Of course.
I really appreciate you coming on the show. You're so
funny.
Of course,
Christine. Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right now. I want to thank you so much again for tuning in today. Let Matt know that you liked his story and tweet him over there on Twitter at Matt Knutson. And of course, follow me there as well at Storyworthy. And join us next week on Storyworthy for another smart and interesting guy, Christopher Rivas.
It is like something was living inside of me waiting to come out. And I am stealing everything. Just anything I can get my hands on. I steal and I steal and I steal because I say, like, these corporations don't need it, right? I mean, they have enough and I'm a college kid, so I need it.
Don't miss Christopher Rivas next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and everyone on the Wondery team. There's a team, Matt. There's a team.
Teamwork makes the dream work.
That's what I'm saying. And on behalf, one more time, of you, Matt Knutson, thank you so much.
Thanks, Christine. You're the best.
My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy of your day.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.